Welcome to the Collections by Michelle Brown Show, a show about people living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality as they create change. This episode is brought to you in partnership with the Center for Peace Counseling and Holistic Healing Services.
Collections by Michelle Brown. I'm your host, Michelle Brown. Each week, we'll be talking with people living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality and creating change. Organizers of Atlanta's Black Pride Weekend proudly boast it is the largest Black Pride in the country. Taking place over the Labor Day weekend, it promises something for everyone, with day and night parties and over 25 events that are open to all. Two of the unique events include an LGBTQ+ food and wine festival and a panel discussion entitled Artists in the Afternoon. Ebanman, Inc., in collaboration with Atlantic Black Pride, is launching the LGBTQ+ Food and Wine Festival, which plans to become an annual event. Ebanman is a lifestyle brand dedicated to enhancing the lives of Black gay men. Its CEO, Tom Logan, who's based in Chicago but travels frequently to Atlanta, will share how the food, wine, and liquors were curated to shine a spotlight on foodies in the Black LGBTQ+ community. It's the first food and wine festival shining an international spotlight on the diversity of LGBTQ influence in food, wine, and the spirits industry. Dr. Derek Tenniel, founder and CEO of Rethink the Narrative Media Company, will moderate the panel for Artists in the Afternoon, Prose, Poetry, and More. Rethink the Narrative's mission is to be a creative voice that educates, empowers, and entertains communities of color and beyond. The panels Dr. Tenniel is moderating will cover everything from tapping your inner artist, how to get published, and more. Planning a road trip to Atlanta for the largest Black Pride in the country? There's something for everyone, including these two unique.
Well, everyone knows how I have this love thing with Atlanta. I mean, sooner or later, I'm going to get back down there and be there. And we have something that's coming up pretty soon. You know, I've been down there for Atlanta Pride before, but today, we're going to talk about a couple of special events, but one of the first ones is by an organization that was founded by our guest today, Tom Logan. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Michelle. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, okay. I see that, you know, we have our mutual friend in Chicago, Phil Esteem, and but I know that you started out in Chicago and moved to Atlanta. How long have you been in Atlanta?
Actually, I am still based in Chicago, but I do go back and forth to Atlanta for different events that we host.
Mm-hmm. And do you try to find those events during the winter? Because, you know, it can be pretty cold in Chicago.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Yeah.
So tell us about your organization, how, and you say you go back and forth between the two. How does that work? I mean, how do you pivot between the two? So tell us, can you tell us briefly about Ebanman, Inc.?
Yeah. So Ebanman, Inc., I founded, say, about 5-6 years ago, and it was based off of the gaps that I was experiencing in my life. Ebanman is a lifestyle for a professional Black gay man. The reason why I created it is not really find individuals such as myself within the online experience as well as different events that was going around in the city. And so with the gaps, I felt like if they're not there, then let me try to create them. So it initially started off as hosting First Friday events for professional Black gay men at different venues. And then from there, I created an online platform. The online platform allows my company to showcase other professionals within corporate, entrepreneurs, or just everyday life that are out there being Black, being professional, being gay, just being themselves. Mm-hmm. After that, I decided that it also needs to be something outside of the current apps or social platforms that are currently out there. And so we also created an eBay Man app. This is a social networking app. Just imagine kind of like your LinkedIn and your Facebook, where it allows you to socialize, network, connect with other individuals, travel, and resources and information that can be shared within the community.
You know, I think that that's great. And the fact that you do that, because it's important to have that kind of app, to have that kind of connection. I remember seeing, because you had, you're one of the sponsors of the Esteem Awards. And it's important to have that, because often, like you said, like you go to the regular apps and sometimes, you know, and we do want to know how to have a good time and everything, but it isn't always about, you know, looking for a love match, a partner, a hookup, hanging out. Sometimes it's that connection that, you know, who else is doing business? And we are a community, as an LGBTQ community, but also people have to recognize that being Black and gay and having a business is different than being white and gay and having a business. So to have a space where you can share ideals, you know, talk about business practices, talk about case studies, you know, what has gone wrong and right and how to overcome it. I mean, I can see that it's so valuable for our community.
Agreed. Yeah.
So where are you based? Are you based, do you consider yourself a national organization?
Actually, it's a global organization. The reason why I say it's global
is, I love that. Mm-hmm.
So our marketing director, his name is Perez Pratt, he's actually based in South Africa. And so he is. Yes, our goal is to be global. So he essentially works out of South Africa for us. Amazing. He helps with developing our LinkedIn profile, also making sure that from a marketing standpoint, our brand is getting noticed. And it is. We have connections also in London. There's a couple people that we connect with also in Paris as well.
Wow, that's awesome. What is the meaning behind the name?
Great question. So Ebane Man stems from the word Ebane, which is an indicative word. And the word means community, means safety, and the love that you would find within a home. So taking the two words together, it essentially means a community of men. On my end, it means a community of Black gay men.
Wow. I love that, you know, and I mean, we're going to talk about one specific event, but eventually I need to circle back with you and talk to you, because not only do I know people, Black gay men, who are starting organizations and are reaching out to people globally, but are in different places doing it. And I mean, and I'm sure you know many of them, but hey, all of you need to be connected and support each other. Okay.
Yeah, and that's the goal of the app. You're correct.
So how did you tell me that you go back and forth between Chicago and Atlanta. How did that link start?
Actually, I have a colleague, Joshua Luke, that is based in Atlanta, and he does a lot of the footwork. He is CEO of a company called Monarch Inc. And so between the two of us, he's helped out tremendously with eBay Man, and also with his projects. And so he is my source and my go-to individual in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. No, I always tell people, you know, like, I love all the, I mean, I like Pride. You know, I go to many Prides. I love Black Pride. I love Black gay Prides. And I especially love the Atlanta Pride, because I was telling someone a few years ago, I happened to be down there. I went, and there was a strong sense of community, you know.
Yes.
In fact, many years ago, like briefly, I sort of lived down there for not a full year. I got sort of homesick and had other things and came back to Michigan. But there's a strong sense of community. I loved being down there amongst my folks, you know. And it's like I'm often tempted to be there. This Black Pride is coming up, and you are launching the annual LGBTQ food and wine festival. Can you tell us about that, and how did that concept come in, and to do it as part of Pride?
Wow, great question. And I love the way you accent it, because it is a very huge undertaking, a very huge event, and we wanted to have some historical connotation behind it as well. So the reason why we created it was for twofold. One, most prides, and that's all over, are usually generated from various prides in the park where there's music and a really great experience. But sometimes I personally was feeling that there was still a connection that I was missing as not only a mature or from an older demographic, but also just from the kind of also experience that I wanted to experience being a part of Pride. And so that's the other component with the Bang Man, is trying to figure out other ways to keep more of an inclusive experience for mature individuals and individuals that may not feel included in certain Pride events that are currently taking place. And so I wanted to create a different atmosphere, a more elevated experience. We as a community, we love food, we love wine, spirits, and we really want to enjoy that. And a lot of times we're only enjoying that in a heterosexual environment. And so why not create that opportunity within our own community? We have a ton of foodies, a ton of chefs, a ton of bakers, a ton of influencers, culinaries, sommeliers that are part of our community. Why not showcase that? And so the reason behind it, again, is that I always want to create environments that I would enjoy, my circle would enjoy, and hopefully a large number of the demographic would enjoy as well. And so that's how the food and wine came about. I wanted to create experience during Pride where myself and other individuals that may not feel that some of the other events and festivities that were going on fit their needs or what they were looking to experience during Pride. So I said, let's host a food and wine festival. And the great thing about it is we've gotten huge and rave reviews for it, which I was very pleased with, not only within the community, but outside of the community as well. And a lot of them have wanted to join and jump on board, as you stated, because it is the inaugural event. And it's something that hopefully we can create this continuous history with. Yes.
You know, and it is true. I mean, and sometimes it's like you'll have like a small party and you'll have friends who get together who appreciate food, fine wine, you know, special liquor, you know, not just, you know, And that conversation and things to talk about. And we have a lot of people in there. But like you said, often we, as Black gay people, we don't celebrate them. We don't lift them up. And you never know who the next one is to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. You talk about as an education component to it, to educate new impressions of the LGBTQ community in the food and spirits industry. Okay. I mean, we often know people who are the bakers, who are the sommeliers, who are, you know, foodies. but we don't. Others don't, you know, and they go like, they figure, you know, oh, if it's Black Gay Pride, there's going to be somebody there with a grill and, you know, passing around, whatever. But there are so many great restaurants and stuff. Who are you trying, to educate not only our community, but the community at large?
Great question. Again, yes, actually both. So for our community, actually showcasing the different options that we have. There's some great restaurants down there. We're actually partnering with one Black gay couple. They own a restaurant called Forks and Flavors in Atlanta. They're hosting a curated experience, a flight menu for us on that Friday. And we're also showcasing our community to corporate America, to individuals that typically may look at not-for-profit organizations or may look at the Black gay community or LGBTQ community as a statistic. Let's start looking at us as consumers. Let's start looking at us as viable dollars and making sure that we service them. And that's, again, what eBay Man is about, is making sure that we are looked at as consumers and how can I be the concierge to my clientele, which is the Black gay man, but also focusing on the LGBTQ community at large. And that's where the Food and Wine Festival comes in. And again, rave reviews from corporations that essentially are asking, is this your first event? We've never heard of it. Yes, we're definitely interested. So we're really pleased about, again, the positive feedback that we have been receiving.
You know, and when I listen to you talk, and I also think how, you know, we talk about representation. And often we know people who are, I mean, I have a friend who is here who is a baker. But the jobs that when she'd go in and she'd say, well, you know, I'm interested in being, you know, your head baker and all like that. And they would go like, yeah, sure. Well, this is where you can stop. And she'd, no, I have this experience. But it was the fact that no one had ever seen, you know, a Black lesbian and you know, just a Black woman with this skills and background. And this, by having this type event, you know, that's lifting us up. That's really lifting us up. So when someone comes in, it isn't like, oh, you know,
this is started
as a sous chef, you know.
Yeah, again, it sets the stage. It sets the stage to, and we even made the statement of, it sets the national stage that these individuals are getting showcased. There's a great magazine that is an ally, Cuisine Noir, and they were so on board. They want to partner with us where they're showcasing not only the festival, but moving forward, they also want to help with showcasing the different sommeliers, the chefs, the bakers that are included within the community. We're also working with a spirits and wine distributor that is creating an initiative to also showcase it from a wine ownership, from a spirits ownership within the community, and we're working to be the brand ambassadors for them.
So who planned what was going to be showcased as far as food, liquors, wine? How did you come up with what you were going to showcase?
Joshua and I have taken on this first year in creating the experience. And the experience was figuring out what's the best we can do for the first year. It's a little bit more curated, a little bit more figuring out what's the portion of LGBTQ, what's the portion of Black that we need, what's the portion of ally that we need to kind of showcase a very well-rounded balance. And that was our goal for this, and was to also make it a bridge event, that not only was it LGBTQ, not only was it Black, but we were just trying to make sure that everyone was a part of it. And so curating that, we reached out to as many individuals as possible and still reaching out to individuals that are still coming on board. They still feel like they have time. We're making sure that everyone that wants to be a part is a part.
You know, what I like about it, too, is like, okay, you're catering it to the Black LGBTQ community, but we're Black. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, that, I mean, we Black people, I mean, Black people, we have an amazing palette for so
yeah.
many different things. And, you know, and to sort of say, hey, here, again, representation, here we are, but this is our culture, our food, our taste in things that we like. And, you know, I think that it's amazing. Do you, when you're looking at wines and you're looking at whiskeys, when you're looking at food, when you're looking, are you looking for, particularly in wines and the beverage part, are you looking for people who are more than just distributors, who are distilling, who are maybe vineyards, developing vineyards? Are you looking at that too?
Of course. As you probably know, in the wine and spirits industry, it's a huge disproportion between the number of owned wine mm-hmm. vineyards versus the actual consumer. And so in terms of our research and reaching out to individuals, in terms of finding LGBTQ owned, it was definitely a challenge. There is a large of Black wine vintners that are out there. And so we reached out. A lot of them are based in California. There's actually a few in Atlanta. But that was, yeah, that's what we are still doing. We are consistently reaching out to them. When it comes to the, again, spirits as well, it is a challenge trying to find people within our community, but that's what we're working on. We have some great ones. There is Lambda Vodka that's based out of New York. They have their own vodka company. And there's a few other ones, too, that we are making connections with.
Mm. Is it your hope that in doing it and by showcasing it, it will inspire, like, the next generation of people who right, maybe right now are like, wow, I didn't know we could do that, you know? And then start, maybe that they will start to have restaurants, you know, develop their own, you know, more than just brews, but, you know, maybe say, hey, let's get together and buy some land, and what would it take for us to have a vineyard and take it all the way?
Yes. The initiative that I would love to work on is creating safe spaces for the community, creating financial wealth and heritage for the community as well.
Mm.
For the Black LGBTQ community, as we get older, as we retire, there's, again, such a disproportion in terms of health and how we will be taken care of as we get older. A lot of us may not have children or a spouse or significant other that we can lean upon. So a lot of times there is that additional need for financial stability. And so how do we do that? How do we create that well-rounded financial plan for us? And a lot of times that may consist of investments or finding out about different opportunities. How do we do that? We have to internally create them.
Do you feel, I mean, are you hoping to also have, like, not just an educational part, but a historic part? Because some of the stuff we've been doing, and maybe it was passed on generation in the family, and it's about to die out, where maybe there's one person who's left in the family who might be the queer member of the family, but like to like go back and find your recipes. This is not brand new. Think about what your family has been doing. I mean, one of the things that makes me think about it was I was listening. I'm one of those NPR nerds, and they were talking about one of the islands in South Carolina where there were like 29 people left from this Gullah community. And part of what they were talking about was like, how do we bring people back and not lose our culture? Part of our culture has been in, you know, developing recipes, foods, whatever. Are you hoping to have that historical component at some point to come through? Like, hey, you know, this isn't brand new. We've been doing it. Let's reclaim it and reclaim it as ours in a safe space.
Yes, yes. extremely great question. Working with, there's a gentleman actually based here in Chicago, and his name is Charles Nelson. And so what he is creating, he is working on creating a historical museum for the LGBTQ community. So definitely working with him to incorporate as much history as possible, because it is a need for it. A lot of times you do hear from the youth in the LGBTQ community that they're looking for sometimes that guidance or reference points to help them navigate in their journey, or some type of mentorship, and that there is a lack of that. There is a lack of that that needs to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny that you should talk about, because I had just recently talked to someone who is from here in Detroit, and he's trying to collect the same thing. But I also remember talking to someone, you know, we had Ruth Ellis who lived here, and like Ruth Ellis lived to be 100, and someone did a film on it, and it showed how way back in the day, you know, she had her own business and, you know, employed other people and made a safe space for us. And there are people who now look like, wow, if Ruth could do it, you know, we have that. We are entrepreneurs. So I think that's a really, I mean, we are such an amazing community. I mean, you know, we're more, like you said, we're always more than parties or more than, you know, and I do love, you know, Pose and all that, but we're more than that. We've had all of these rich things, and even within, like, the ballroom community, there's a rich history. Food, and particularly for Black people, okay, because, you know, they gave us nothing, and look at all we've made out of it, you know. I mean, we were like, and so to be able to highlight this and to really like, this is what you're doing to me, is to say, this is the ultimate. This is what we can be. More of us can be, you know, this greatness. I think this is like really incredible. So you've had good turnout. I mean, good reception as far from everyone, right?
Yes, we have had, as I said before, some really great feedback. Individuals that want to come out and show their support as well as showcase to the community. A lot of them definitely do get that buying power of the LGBTQ community. We are connoisseurs. We love the finer things. Why would you not happen to that community? And so a lot of them are, again, definitely on board. And so we humbly appreciate all the positive responses that we have been receiving.
So I know that on the second you're having cocktails and conversation. How many people are you hoping, you know, what's a good balance? I mean, you want to have people there, but you also want to have people to have the best experience from that. What are you looking at as far as numbers? Where is it going to be? And tell us a little bit more about cocktails and conversation.
Oh, great. So cocktails and conversation is actually a partnership that is a well-rounded conversation that we partner with Phil from Philistine. There is Dr. Lucy Saunders as well, as based in Ohio. And what they wanted to create was a conversation around not only the arts in the LGBTQ community, but mental health and wellness, business, financial support, entrepreneurship. And so we're creating kind of this mini conversation and cocktails talk on that Saturday. We're looking from anywhere to 75 to 125 people to show up. It is a free event. And we really want individuals to come out and enjoy and really get an experience of a great dialogue. Again, we wanted to create another type of event outside of what most would typically expect during Pride season, and capture that audience that feel like they're not being included at all.
Now, I know what you're also doing. There's spirit and food pairings. Another thing that I just recently learned, I'm not a drinker, okay? I'm going to be honest. I'm not a drinker. But, you know, like I told you, I'm that nerd. I'm that nerd. So I'm watching this program, and I learned that Kentucky has bourbon, Tennessee has whiskey, and it has something to do with the water, you know. Are you going to, you know, that kind, and I was like, wow, this is interesting. But also, yeah. You know, I've been to restaurants and it's like, well, if you're lucky, you have someone who'll take the time to tell you this wine would go well with this meal. But often you're just like, you know, winging it. Is this part of what the spirit and food pairings are going to be? You're going to have vendors and professionals to help people understand that, or even better, how to just ask the right questions?
Great, yes. So essentially for the pairings, there's a gentleman that is by the name of Charles Springfield. He is a sommelier out of New York. And so he is going to assist us with the wine pairings. We also have partnered with Fumana International. They are based out of Atlanta. They import all of their wine collection out of South Africa. So a lot of the individuals that are a part of the tasting and pairings and also our VIP experience will have an opportunity to experience wines out of South Africa. Also within the event on that Friday night with the flight menu, her name is Maura. She is actually working with Forks and Flavors to create a flight menu. So they paired her wines from South Africa with their dishes.
Interesting. So you've got, I know Friday there's, okay, I know that you have events scheduled for Friday and Saturday. Saturday, I know, is at the Festival Marketplace. Friday is at Forks and Flavors. What do you, and then, is that it? Just those two things? Yeah.
So Friday night is the dinner at Forks and Flavors. Saturday night is our cocktails and conversation. And then Sunday is our full day food and wine festival from 11 to 8 p.m.
And what is that going to look like?
Wow. So the Food and Wine Festival is essentially, it's a marketplace of various vendors. We have about 30 to 40 vendors within the marketplace from all walks of life. We have chefs, we have bakers, the sommelier will be doing the wine pairings and tastings. We'll also have artisans, mixologists, individuals that will help curate cocktails to provide that experience. There's also a LGBTQ-owned lounge here in Chicago, cocktail lounge, named Nobody's Darling. They're partnering with us, and we're so pleased that they're flying down to Atlanta, and they're going to provide the VIP experience for us. So within that tent, the more curated experience, they've created these crafted cocktails for us. We're working with the chef to create these, again, curated menus to pair with the cocktails. So we want to make sure we provide this amazing vibe for our VIP ticketed individuals.
Now, are we going to have to just wait for once a year to have this, or is your plan to try to do it in other cities, a version of this?
Extremely great
globally.
Oh, you already know, yes. So my goal is actually in Chicago next year, earlier, prior to summer, maybe right before summer, and then still continue to have it in Atlanta. And so each year we want to try and maybe add on an additional city or maybe rotate on different cities depending on where. There's a couple people actually on the East Coast that are extremely interested in it as well.
I can see that. Now, you're making me hungry. You're making me hungry already. Hey, you know, wow. Well, you have to do it in Chicago. I can't make it to Atlanta this year, so you have to do it in Chicago, and I'll be there, okay?
You have the VIP set up for you already.
So now I know that there are going to be people. I got two things. First of all, people who want to be engaged and involved in it this year about buying tickets for the events. But then I know that there are going to be people who are going to hear this and they're going to go like, darn, I'm doing that. I should be a part of it. I want to connect. So tell us how people can, who are going to be in Atlanta, you know, and if you don't just have to be from Atlanta, because like I said, I was there 1 year and I'm from Michigan. How can they get their tickets and be involved this year? But if you're someone who's going like, I wish I had known about this. Let me think about it. I want to be involved long term. Who do they reach out to you? And how does that happen?
Great question again. We have our living website, which is www.lgbtfw.com. On that living website, you will continue to see updates on all the information about our current events.
Mm-hmm.
Also, reach out to me, and my email address is tlogan, that's L-O-G-A-N, at ebaneman, which is E-B-A-N-M-A-N.com. But on our website, which is a living website, and the reason why I call it a living website, it will always update on future events that we also plan on having more curated experiences prior to our major festivals, leading up to our major festivals.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also have a marketplace. If you are a vendor that has a product, you can post your product on the site for other patrons that may want to shop and support. We're also working on the first LGBTQ wine club experience. With a wine club experience, you'll also have an opportunity to support and participate and taste the sommelier wines that we've curated, the South African wines that we've partnered with, an array of things that we've curated experiences for the LGBTQ community.
So I have a question. I mean, and I have a lot of friends who have been to South Africa. You know, I'd go to South Africa to visit and stuff. But, you know, there are some people who will go, oh, why are they having things from South Africa? It seems to me from what I'm seeing, there's a vibrant community there. But how did you connect with South Africa sommeliers?
Great question again. Loving this conversation. The way we connected, as I was looking for people within our community, within the LGBTQ community, that are wine or spirits owners, again, as I stated before, it's very limited. So when I came across an individual that is based in Africa, that is part of the community, it was a huge excitement for me to be able to show this individual, and we're working on being able to really showcase this individual. And so within that connection, I wind up connecting with an importer that focuses on that particular market. And for me, again, I always want to try and elevate the experience and also showcase the depth of not only the LGBTQ, not only the Black, but if I can also showcase from what I would consider the motherland, I would love to do that. And so that was the reasoning behind that and making that connection with the wine distributor out of South Africa. It was a win-win situation for me. She's excited we're as well, just to bring another level of experience to the community.
You know, like I said, Tom, you and I are going to talk again. And I love that. And I love what you're doing, not only like through this, but that's the other thing is like particularly for our community here in the United States, that we sometimes have to look beyond and recognize that we are part of the greater diaspora. And within that, all of these things are happening, and to be a part of it. We don't have to be isolated. You know, we don't have to see ourselves through this limited lens that sometimes is here in the United States of America, that we are part of this huger, broader community, and representation matters. I mean, you know, maybe you'll see, hey, they're doing that in South America. Erica, how come I can't do this in South Carolina? You know?
Exactly.
So I think that I applaud you
for your
vision, for your inclusiveness, and for making this happen. I think this is just like really, really awesome. this is just like, but I should have known. Anytime Phil tells me, you know, you really need to talk to him. And I was there at the Esteem Awards. I heard, you know, you had like a quick blurb, and I was like, oh, you know, and I made right another call. I had to circle back and talk to him.
Okay,
but
thank
then this came up then that gave me this opportunity to talk to you. So again, I have that for people to, and I will also, you know, put it visually, you know, post that. If you want to buy tickets, if you want to stay in touch, to go to www.lgbtfw.com. You've got your tickets, you've got registration. I mean, you're going to keep it up to date about events.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this is just like great. I wish you the best of success. If some magic should happen that I could beam myself in there this weekend, I mean, that weekend for that, I certainly would let you know, but I don't think it's going to happen because I've got another trip coming. But I mean, I see this. I could see you doing this in D.C., in New York, and you know, all over, really. And it just being a phenomenal success. Congratulations on pulling it together. And I'm going to talk to you after I'm going to give you a minute to relax and unwind after this because I know it's going to be some work. I'm going to give you a minute to relax and unwind, and I'll reach out to you, and we'll talk again.
Awesome.
Collections by Michelle Brown airs every Thursday at 7 p.m. You can subscribe now and listen to the podcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Be sure to like the Collections by Michelle Brown Facebook page and mark your calendar so you never miss an episode.
Well, we just finished talking about this event, the Atlanta Black Pride, and part of that Black Pride being artists in the afternoon. But what we want to talk about now is to zero in on one of the moderators for Artists in the Afternoon, who is also an author, a thought, I would say, leader, change agent in his own right. Derek, and I.
Yes.
You know what? I usually ask people how to pronounce their last name, so I'm going to let you tell me. How do you pronounce your last name?
It is Tennille, like the captain and Tennille. You might be too young to remember that, but
I remember them, and I was going to say that, and I said, "Oh, he's going to say how hokey is that?" You know that, but yeah, that was what I was going to say, Tennille. Derek, it is so good to talk to you, and like I was telling you, one of the things that I liked about you is you're talking about rethinking the narrative, which is part of your book. But you are originally from Memphis, correct?
Yes.
And now you're living in Atlanta. What was
yes.
life like growing up in Memphis, and what was the narrative that you heard as far as who you were, what you could be, where you could go?
Well, Memphis is, of course, the buckle of the Bible Belt in the fact that you have a lot of mainstream denominations, several mainstream denominations, I should say, that are headquartered in the city of Memphis, and one of them being the Church of God in Christ. And so when we say that, you know, there's a church on every corner in Memphis, we really literally mean that there is a church on every corner. I grew up and attended church in Memphis in one of the at a Baptist church, but we were, I would say, right down the street from three of the largest and most prominent Kojic churches in the city. And so growing up in Memphis and surrounded by the religiosity of the city did have a bearing on the upbringing that I indeed received. Memphis is a very a wonderful city that is was once upon a time known as America's distribution center. And that being so, Memphis is also a very polarizing city. It's very black and white. It's very, again, religious, non-religious. And so it's a struggle. It was a struggle for me to find my footing and my place as, at that time, a member, a silent member, I would say, not necessarily a closeted member, but a silent member of the black queer community. And so, of course, I grew up being conflicted, as many people during that time, about my sexuality as well as my spirituality. And I struggled for many years in order to reconcile those two things. And when I finally got to a point of where I was able to reconcile my spirituality and my sexuality, I wrote about it in a book called Saved, Sanctified, Insane, Gender Loving. And, of course, that a play on the old Pentecostal phrase, saved, sanctified, and filled with the Holy Ghost. So I took that and I just kind of wrote just a few stories about my experiences and how I came to reconcile my sexuality and spirituality. Growing up in, once I moved away, of course, but part of that was growing up in a city that is so religious and has that Pentecostal and charismatic and Baptist and CME flair all at the same time.
Wow. You know, and I noticed, because I was looking at some of the other books, and I saw that Saved, Sanctified, and Same Gender Loving, and also you wrote Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And,
yes.
You know, and was all of this part of, okay, first of all, did you write them before or after you left Memphis? And was all of this as part of your coming to live your life authentically? Not, like you said, you know, you weren't closeted, but you weren't totally living authentically because you had these conflicts about, is this right? You know, is this wrong? I've been raised in this. So when did you write these, and were they part of that coming to the point of living more authentically and out and open?
Yes. I wrote the books after I left Memphis. I didn't really start. I've always been a writer. But there was a period in time in college that I stopped writing, and I stopped writing at a particular point in time because, you know, writing makes you confront yourself. Whether you're writing nonfiction or fiction, there's a portion or part of you that finds its way into the stories or the characters. And because I was, at that time, could not bring myself to face to walk in my authentic truth at 18, 19 years old, I stopped writing. And I stopped writing for a period of 10 years. So it wasn't until after I moved to Atlanta, and I began to work on reconciling my sexuality and spirituality that I started writing again. And so I published Saved, Sanctified, and Same Gender Loving in 2011. So it's a little over 11 years old now. And then I followed up with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I think at that particular time, I was just, you know, wanting to get something out there so that people like myself and those coming behind me would have some sort of reference point to say, hey, this individual went through this and was able to reconcile his sexuality and spirituality, and I can do it too. So those books came after I left Memphis and I moved to the city of Atlanta.
So after you did it, you moved to Atlanta. Were you able to take those books when you went back to, like, even to visit, or to bring those lessons learned back to friends, congregation, or have conversations with people about, oh, were you feeling, we didn't realize that you were feeling this way, or, oh, we never thought about it, we never discussed it. Were you able to bring those conversations back to the Memphis community?
I was able to bring the conversations back, not in a, I could say, a very broad manner, but there were some conversations that were had or not had. The first book, Saved, Sanctified, and Sanctioned, the Loving, I wrote it in such a way that unless, and I also published the first version under pseudonym. So unless you knew me, unless you knew the situation, you did not know who I was referring to unless you were quite, you know, unless you knew me. So I didn't use specific names in the book. I gave generalities, but nevertheless, I knew exactly who I was referring to. And I did have some conversations with some people, and I did go back and have a couple of book signings and participate in a few events in the city of Memphis after I published the book. So it did open up quite a few doors in the, I would say, the community at large. But in terms of the church community, still very limited, still very closed in terms of that. I think things are shifting and changing, but I'm not sure how much they have in the city in the traditional church.
So you've got another title. You know, I mean, I sort of look at your titles. You also have, like, Grown as Men, An Inconvenient Truth.
So, yeah, Grown as Men was, most of my books are autobiographical in nature for the most part, more self-help. And so Grown as Men was my attempt at writing fiction again, because I had not written fiction in so long. So I wanted to take those dynamics of what I had experienced growing up as a young person in the church, as a young minister in the church, and I wanted to put, let's see how far I could push the envelope. And so I'll tease it out just a little bit, and I've only released what I call one mini story of that series. But the two main characters are both preachers, and they're in love with each other. And so they're struggling with whether or not to live openly and authentically. One of the preachers is the assistant pastor at his father's church. And even though his parents know about him, it is a case of don't ask, don't tell. Whereas the other, his fiance, is very comfortable with who he is. And he has all but divorced himself, from lack of a better term, from traditional church. So there is this struggle when they become engaged as to, you know, how are we going to live our lives authentically?
Wow. So, yeah, I know. And I know that often, and I talk to other people sometimes, like, they said, well, I wanted to tell this, but, you know, I wrote it like sort of fiction. Whatever. But did you have people, like you said, people who knew you knew, you know? But when did, and especially the one that you wrote and you didn't use your own name, what made you go back and say, hey, I'm claiming saved, sanctified, and same gender loving? What made you decide to go and claim that?
I was driving down I-20 here in Atlanta, and Spirit said to me, do not use your pseudonym again.
Mm.
And And I was like, huh? And so that was it wasn't a conversation between me and Spirit. It was more like a, okay. And so when I printed the second edition, after I went back and made some edits, then I put my name on there. The style in which I wrote the book is still the same, but I put my likeness, I gave a little bit more detail about my biography on the back of the cover. So I fully owned my truth and fully owned my work. Sometimes, you know, when we, I was trying to figure out, I guess, in using a pseudonym, it wasn't to bring shame or anything upon anyone. But sometimes we have a tendency, whether we realize it or not, to protect our abusers. And lead that, in a sense, that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to protect the very people that had a hand in these stories. And so then it didn't allow me to walk in my truth authentically.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, yes.
So like the spirit came and said, you know, don't do that again.
Yeah. Pretty much that was it. The hand tapping, like, nope, don't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You are who you are.
Not a little suggestion, like, maybe you should, don't do that.
No.
Wow.
So typically when spirit speaks to me, I can recount the exact location as to where I am. And so that's how I was able to tell you. I could probably go back to the exact spot and tell you where I heard it.
Wow. So what made you move from Memphis to Atlanta?
I was sitting at my former church, and some things had occurred. And Spirit said to me, I'm moving you out of the shadow of your pastor. And at the time, I had no idea what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the next maybe few days after that occurred, Atlanta just kept coming up. And I thought it was me. I thought that everything that had happened and transpired and had gone through, that I was the one trying to run away from some things. And so I didn't really talk to anyone about what I was contemplating. And a dear friend of mine, who was in ministry as well, came to me and said to me that it was time for me to go.
Mm.
Again, had not had any conversations with anyone about anything. And at that point, it was confirmation for me. And so over the next, I believe it was year or so, I began to make preparation. I left Memphis because I needed to grow. I felt that I needed to figure out who I was. And I also needed to figure out who I was not. And so moving to Atlanta gave me the opportunity to shed my religiosity and to just be Derek, because I had for so long and for 7 years wrapped myself in being, at that time, Minister Tennille and then Elder Tennille. I didn't know who Derek was. And so moving here gave me the opportunity to just simply be and to be Derek.
Wow. I mean, it seems like I said you got kicked out the crib. It was like it's time for you to go. It's time for you to go. Yeah, and you need to go. And it's time for you to claim your name.
Yes.
Was this
yes.
the beginning? Let's rethink that narrative.
I would like to think so, because before we even made it to this iteration of Rethink the Narrative, there were some other business ventures that I kind of played with that had the same kind of flavor, but I didn't quite grow into. I wasn't quite ready for them. A lot of this, when I came to Atlanta, I came to Atlanta not only to find myself, but I also, when I came, enrolled in a doctoral program. And so working on my doctorate changed my perspective on a lot of things. It really opened my mind to how I was seeing the world and part of my transformation. And so with that, I began to evolve, and this whole notion of I'm a narrative researcher. So this whole notion of the counter story and the counter narrative began to permeate my being. And so that's where Rethink started to come in at. And then, of course, the spiritual community that I became a member of here in the city. Again, we were progressive, Christ-conscious, spiritual community that, you know, that was challenged. The pastor challenged us to think and then think again. So the first iteration of my company was called Let's Rethink That. And then as I began, the vision began to expand, I changed the name to Rethink the Narrative, keeping the same premise of thinking and then thinking again about what it is you believe and perceive.
Mm-hmm.
So the evolution to where I am now and where Rethink the Narrative is occurred over, I would say, at least a 10-year period to get to where I am today. So I'm really all about, our mission is to be a creative voice that educates, empowers, and entertains communities of color and beyond.
Mhm. And I mean, it's like you've done a lot of stuff, okay? But how did, as you were starting to rethink your narrative, you're doing motivational speaking. I mean, did you find that your message started to change as you were rethinking for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There was no way I could stay the same and go around teaching and preaching about rethinking the narrative, and my narrative was the same. And so, yes, as I went around the country, I began to, again, give people what I was, the transformation that I had been through. I began to talk about that, and I still talk about that. That is part of my message and what I encourage people to do. And so, yes, there's no way I could have stayed in some sort of traditional box while trying to teach people to come outside the box. So, yes, I evolved, and I took people on that evolution with me. And I'm still taking people, hopefully, those who are open to rethinking the narrative on that journey with me.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I like about that, and often, you know, when I talk to people, I mean, not just like on this show, but I have been in different employment situations, counseling type things. And I mean, and often what I think about is, I can recall at one point I was in a HR position, and there would be, I remember this woman coming in who had no narrative, really. If you asked her, well, you know, what can you do? I mean, it was just like she didn't see herself. She didn't look at her life and see the narrative of her life and define herself by that. Because when she did that, there were so many skills and talents and abilities of what she could reach for were far more than what she
yes.
came in with.
Yes.
And often I'll talk to someone and it's like, you say, well, tell me about you. And or I'll ask them, like, you know, they'll send me a bio and all it is like, I worked here, I worked there, I worked that. But you're so much more than that.
Yeah.
What do you tell people about claiming, developing their narrative?
Two things. One, you know, we have the identity that is assigned to us, but mm-hmm. we also have the identity that we give ourselves. And part of the of that, I ended up writing a little short book about that as well, entitled Yes, I Can. And mm-hmm. Yes, I Can is all about celebrating yourself and understanding and knowing that you have the power to recreate the reality that you want to see. If you don't like it, what you're seeing, then recreate it. And you can do that as many times as you want to and need to in order to become the person that you were designed to be before the foundations of the world were laid. So that is the core and the foundation of who I am and what I do in terms of, hey, if you don't like it, recreate it. And if you don't like that, guess what? Recreate it again. So it's this whole power of manifesting and manifestation that we don't, a lot of times, we're more powerful than we give ourselves credit for. We're more powerful than we imagine. I do subscribe to the notion and the old scripture that as a man thinketh in his heart, a man or a woman, or as a person thinketh in their heart, so is that person. And so... And then there's life and death in the power of the tongue. So we shall have whatsoever we say. We are that powerful that our words, whatever we say, the universe has to bend and respond and create, whether it's positive or negative, the universe will create whatever we say. We are that powerful. So once I understood that within my own life, I began to recreate the reality that I wanted to see. And trust me, it's a lot. I like what I see 20 years later than I did 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, really, I mean, you know, it's like you want to be, it's like a journey. I mean, and you want to see, like you say, that you're going and accomplishing and doing things. Do you ever have someone who maybe has not seen you in a while, do they ever go like, wow, how did you get here? You were, you know, you were quiet, you were shy, you were questioning, and now here you are, and you got the nerve to be out here trying to tell other people to do the same thing. Do you ever have people come up there and, you know, like sort of, you know, challenge you, like, you know, what is your lane, you know?
Yeah. The funny part is it is indeed people that knew me way back then, but the funny part is it's also people who are close to me who were close to me way back then as well. You know, I was the very traditional one. I was the one who took the Bible very literal, and so for me to go from this very straight laced Pentecostal boy to thinking a new thought and doing something totally different, and my whole notion of God and the universe has been changed and expanded, I am a 180 from where I was 20 years ago. And so they, my friends who knew me back then, they look at me like, oh my God, this is not who we thought you would evolve into. Because they thought, I mean, you know, I was serious about church and about God and about religion. I was very, very serious. But also, at that same time, I was curious because I knew that that was not all of the story, that there was something more, that my version of God at that time was not the final version of God. And so I had to leave where I was in order to go on this spiritual journey to become this person. And so now I see spirit, universe, intelligence, God, whatever you want to name it or call it, I see it in so many different splendors, in so many different ways, and in everything there is. One of my favorite lines in the Color Purple, when Shug Avery, and this is the musical, sings, God is inside you and everyone else, there was or ever will be. We came into this world with God, but only those who look inside find him. Uh-huh. And that is that place in space that I live in.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have, and often, like, someone would say, you know, when people talk about, like, about staying in your lane, or like, just like, what are you going to do? And I said, you know, I don't have a lane. I said, I'm part of a multi-lane super highway, you know, and you know, yeah. and I merge in and out of traffic as needed. And people want, you know, because often, like, how important it is, like, to me is to, in claiming your narrative and thinking about your narrative, because often I have found that, like, I'll show up at something and people want to put me in this box.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, no, you know, I mean, I might bring it through this, but I've got other things to do too. Do you find that, you know, I mean, I know that you've been an educator, you've been a motivational speaker, you've done all this, that often when you show up, people want to, like, okay, well, Dr. Tennille will be talking about he's this, that, and the other, and we're expecting, boom, and want to put you in a box?
Yes. People want to put me in the box, but I figured out a long time ago that, especially when I started to walk into this acceptance of my sexuality, that box that I had was blown to smithereens. Yes, but people still want to put me in that box. And depending on the environment, you know, I try to meet people where they are, because some people cannot eat the food that you are serving because they're not ready to. And so I try to give people a lot of times what they can handle, depending on what their appetite is. I know the consciousness that I am able to eat from, and I'm still constantly going and exploring and saying what more is there. But yes, there are people who try to keep me in that box. But there's enough of them to know that, yeah, I can only go so far with you when it comes to certain strains of thought. I can only go so far.
Not really. Sometimes it's like, you know, okay, and it's like, all right, okay, well, wait a minute, you know, all right, wait a minute, because you don't want to be, you know, I don't want to suck all the air out of the room with my big ideals, right, and my big thoughts, but I do, right, want to be that breath of fresh air that not only brings in my ideals, but stimulates others to,
yes,
to do what they're going to do. So,
yes,
you know, so you... When you kept going and you've gotten now, it's like, is let's rethink that. Is that like a organization? Is that your business name, or is that something that people can come to and get ideas from? What all do you,
yeah,
understand?
Yeah, Rethink the Narrative is my organization. It is a media company. And so we're in the process now of developing projects that really cause people to do exactly what the name says, to rethink. Mm-hmm. We recently completed, and we're in the process of still editing and trying to get some other things done, a docuseries entitled Queer and Authentic, or Q&A, My Name Is, and my pronouns are. And we explored the stories of several individuals in on their journey to reconciling basically their sexual and gender identity in today's society. And so that's one of the things that we're working on. And then there's another docuseries that I've got planned that will deal with an aspect of mental health within our community. So we're looking at doing some more exciting and wonderful things. So also in addition to that, the company, we also publish other authors. So we have quite a few authors under the Rethink the Narrative wing, and their work is, again, the whole premise of pushing the envelope and thinking and then thinking again about what people believe and perceive. And in addition, we have some traditional thinkers that are under the Rethink the Narrative umbrella, but we also have some people out there that push the envelope in terms of this whole space and place, especially where spirituality is concerned. So we covered the gamut, and I'm looking forward in the coming months and years to pushing the envelope even more relative to getting people to think and then think again about what they believe and perceive.
You know, I was looking at the book Rethink Freedom, Personal to Political, and I noticed that one of the contributors is someone that I know, John Trimble. And how did you determine the contributors to this work?
I just simply put an all call out to, I think, on Facebook at that particular time. And whoever responded, I gave them the title or the concept behind the book, but I did not tell them what to write. So I would like to think that Spirit orchestrated everything, and the stories and poems that came in simply fit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got to where we are with that particular piece.
Wow.
So it wasn't a, hey, I need you to write this, I need you to write that. Nope. You do what Spirit tells you to do and how you feel led. And it all came together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it difficult to say, okay, these are the final ones, or, you know, this one really gets it, but, you know, or maybe, like, this one isn't saying it the way that I would, but I get it.
No, there was very, of course, there was some editing that occurred, but in terms of changing of concepts and ideas, no, I would say that the contributors' original ideas made it to the final cut of the book, the final print of the book.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, well, we're going to take a slight break, let people stretch their legs, and I'm going to tell you right now, we will talk again, because I think there's ways that we have a bigger conversation to have than what time today does. But I want to talk about an event that you're going to be involved in during Atlanta Black Pride, Artists in the Afternoon. So I'm going to take a pause for the cause, as they say, and we'll be right back.
All right.
And I am here with the captain of his narrative, Dr. Derek Kinnear. You know, I had to get that at some point. I couldn't resist. You know, that's funny.
That's how I get people to remember my name all the time.
I had to get it in sometime. You know, one of the things that you're going to be involved in, and we've been talking about Pride in Atlanta in September, is you are going to moderate a panel, and it is called Cocktails and Conversations, Artists in the Afternoon. You're going to have prose, poetry, and more. And I'm looking, you know, I always look. I mean, just like on the book, I saw John Trimble. Here I see a good friend of mine, Tim West, poet and author. Dr. Cedric Bridgeforth. I mean, as you were talking about your life being in the church, I remember talking to him, and he talked about his life in the church. I mean, so here you've got this amazing panel, and you're going to moderate two author panels covering everything from tapping your inner artist to how to get published and more. Now, I was in Princeton earlier this year. At one point, I was talking to some young people, and we were talking about activism, and I had given, like rah-rah speech, what we must do as gay people and everything. But then within it, I did some poetry. And this young lady, and I can't think what's the name of this, from this institute, and they were on the panel for social justice. And where they were up there, of course, there weren't that many people of color. And so they were there, and she was like, well, you did poetry. And she said, do you really think that poetry has a role in social justice? And I was telling her, I said, you know, poetry and the arts have always been a part of every social justice movement. There's something about how it touches the heart, the spirit, the soul, and does it. This panel that you're doing, how did it come about? And the types you're using, prose, poetry, more, you've got people from different walks of life. You've got a number of, like I said, Tim M. I met Tim doing poetry, you know, and yeah. I think that's how we first knew each other, as poetry, through poets, and then like later on as authors, you know. So here, Artists in the Afternoon, why that theme, and what are you hoping to develop as you moderate it?
So Artists in the Afternoon was really a concept that I developed several years ago, but did not execute it at that time for various reasons. So when Feel Esteem of the Esteem Awards and Pride Index contacted me, we're good friends, and said, hey, I would like to do an event in Atlanta for Pride with artists. I already had the blueprint written out, so it was a no brainer. All I did was I knew exactly where it was. I pulled it out, dusted it off, and immediately got to work. So Rethink the Narrative and the Esteem Awards. We're presenting the Artist in the Afternoon, and we've got some event sponsors, Redefined LLC, Yvonne Mon, as well as Meek Productions and others. And so we put it together. Phil has been instrumental in helping me pull together all of this wonderful, wonderful talent. But what we wanted to showcase was that, you know, during this weekend, of course, it's a very fun, fabulous, and celebratory weekend. But we also wanted to give people something to think about. We also want to bring forth some enlightenment and throw the arts in there, because like you said earlier, you know, the arts in itself is at the forefront of every movement in America or every movement in history. And so we want to carry that forward, that, you know, while we are celebrating Black Gay Pride, but we want to make sure that we don't forget the arts and the place that the arts have in our culture. And so we're pulling together these wonderful minds, and hopefully we'll get an opportunity to share some of their work and talk about their experiences, so that hopefully we will motivate some other up-and-coming artists to share their works and their thoughts and their perceptions, so that we can keep this momentum going in society. So that's how we came up with it. We put it together relatively in a short period of time, and then brought in again those other sponsors that I mentioned earlier to be a part, and it just came together. It was it was synergistic. It just all flowed and it happened. And so we are so excited about Saturday, September 3rd, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Metro Library at 1332 Metropolitan Parkway here in Atlanta, where we're going to have those panels. I will moderate the first two sessions and the third session, which is the and more that we mentioned on the flyer, which is mental health, wealth, and love, will be moderated by Redefine founder and CEO, Dr. Jesse Sanders. And we will talk about how mental health plays a part in our ability to build wealth and to have successful and loving relationships.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, you know, because I often think about our narrative, and I can recall a few years ago, I was on an author's panel at DC Pride, and we were talking about writing, and there were a number of young, and that actually they were mostly primarily black gay men, but there were one or two lesbians, and they were talking about, like, some of them said that some of the things that they wanted to write that they didn't, because when they went to whoever was going to publish, it was like, particularly if it was for a gay man, they were looking for a very sexualized story.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the women talked about how, well, they wanted that, again, it was like, you sort of got lost, you were drawn to the dark side, you had your affair with a woman, but then you got Jesus, and then you went back to, you know, to living your best life. And they said, well, they felt that if they didn't give in to what whoever it was publishing people that they were going to, that, you know, well, they'd have no success. And I know Tim, I know Cedric, I know Lawayne Childrey, I know a lot of other people who went ahead and wrote something to say what they wanted to say, to tell that true story. I know that you've done that. Part of your moderation on your panel is going to talk about how to get published. And again, like to me, if we claim our narrative, if we say, no, that is not the narrative of black queer people, you know, and our lives are bigger than that.
Yeah.
And we want to tell these stories, that then there'll be a publishing market. But what do you say to young creatives who see that, okay, either if they're writing something, or I know people who are musicians and they say, well, if I don't show myself in this way, I won't get a video, I won't get shown, I won't get play. What do you say to them about holding on to their narrative, and how do they then get published, get what they, you know, be able to make a living? You know, they might not become Beyonce rich, but, you know, they won't be on the corner with a guitar and a cup, you know?
Yes. One of the things is, and I thought about this when I wrote the first book, Save, Sanctify, and Change Gender Loving, it was all for the audience of one. And what I mean by that was, it was for that one person. If it was just that one person that was like myself, that was struggling to reconcile the sexuality and the spirituality, if I only helped that one person, then it was all worth it. And so a lot of times you have to go into it with that mindset. The first person that I helped with was me. as you probably heard, that the message always comes to the preacher first. Well, it came to me first, so I had to disseminate that. But I was able to give it away, and I trust the universe to take that story to whomever, wherever, whoever needs it. So I didn't necessarily, you know, worry about that, and I would encourage them, don't worry about the audience, if there's an audience for it. If spirit allowed you to conceive it, then there's an audience for it. Just put it out there and see where it goes. Publishing in itself, you know, there's so many avenues because there's so many ways to do it now. And with the advent of the internet and the expansion of the internet, self-publishing has hit the roof. There's so many ways to do it and so many avenues to get your book out there. And so that was the route that I chose to take. Again, was the self-publishing route because I was not sure, you know, how well received my story would be. But nevertheless, I wanted to get it out there. And so I used my own resources and did my own work in terms of how could I self-publish this book. So for me, I did not go the traditional route of trying to go through a traditional publishing company. I did self-publish. And there are a lot of wonderful self-publishing operations out there to help young artists get their books out there, to get their stories out there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a whole different world than what it is. So like you said, you know, as you publish it, and I've met people who initially the first version they self-published and then it got picked up later on, you know. I mean, perfect example, Andrea Jenkins, who I don't know if you know, she's a trans activist, but she's on the city council of Minneapolis. She was the first openly trans woman who to be elected, and then she was elected president of the city council. But when I met her, it was through poetry. She had in her purse this book that she had published, you know, just with poems that she thought were important that she did. And every place she went was like, oh, you need to buy a book, you know. And then as life would go, you know, things change. And later on, that she's Andrea Jenkins, you know, on the news.
Yeah.
The book got picked up and done it. But her book and some of the poetry, you know, I've read some of her poetry at a Transgender Day of Remembrance, and there were some people that said, I needed to hear that. So like you said, you write it, and if you touch one person, you know, what's meant to be will be.
Yes.
You know?
And again, it only takes that book getting into the hands of the right person for it, you know, to become a huge success. So, you know, again, put it out there. Just put it out there. That's what I would encourage any person that has a story to tell. Tell the story and let the universe do what the universe does.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, okay. Because we've already established that you and I are going to talk again. If someone for the conversations in Atlanta, how do people find out about it? I know that it is on the LGBTFW.com website under events. I know it's there. It's a free event, correct?
Correct. It is a free event, free entry, free parking, and we will be providing some nice hors d'oeuvres and beverages to go along with it for the afternoon as well. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at RethinkIn. As well, you can find it also with Meet Productions. I do believe that Iban Mon has a link to the information as well about the weekend, and also the Pride Index and the Esteem Awards. So there are many ways to find out about it. If you're on Facebook, we have an events page entitled Artists in the Afternoon, Prose and Poetry and More. So you could easily just find us there and subscribe to the event so that you can receive all of the updates.
Okay, and if someone wants to talk to you, wants to have you come and speak with their group or wants to get on that journey with you regarding rethinking the narrative, what's the best way?
The best way you can DM me on Instagram, Facebook, as well as you can email me directly at Derek, that's D-E-R-R-I-C-K, at rethinkn.com. Again, that's Derek at rethinkn.com.
Well, Derek, I want to thank you for spending this time with me. I look forward to additional conversations from you. Especially, I'd like to hear after you finish your panel, like what came out of that. But I love it. I really love it. You've got some great people going. Speak now.
I want to thank my guest, Tom Logan, CEO of Ebanman Inc., and Dr. Derek Tenio, founder and CEO of Rethink the Narrative Media Company, taking place over the Labor Day weekend. Atlanta's Black Pride promises something for everyone, with day and night parties and over 25 events that are open to all. Be sure and follow Collections by Michelle Brown Blog Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And let us know if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic for a future show. You can listen to this or past episodes of the show on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or Blog Talk Radio. Join us next week when I'll introduce you to another amazing individual living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality and creating change right here on Collections by Michelle Brown. Thank you for listening.